This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey, welcome back to the Tomahawk Take podcast. I am your host, Jake Mastriani, and with me is Alan.
Good day, everybody.
And Fred.
Happy World Championship holiday season, folks.
Yeah, and it is. We're getting into the holiday season now, but that's kind of where I wanted to start because I haven't been on the podcast since they won the World Series, had a lot of stuff going on since then. So I'm still living in the moment. And because shipping stuff is so delayed, my World Series gear is just now arriving, coming in. In fact, I'm just now starting to get some Championship Series stuff as well. So I'm not ready to let go of that World Series feeling. I'm still holding on to that 2021 season, trying not to let go, trying not to get too caught up in the off season, but it is moving along rather quickly here. Again, it's almost Thanksgiving time, but Alan, I'm still living in the moment of everything that happened from the World Series, still feeling that high from winning it all.
Well, I tell you, I'm kind of in that boat with you there. I've been still trying to find some Braves gear to buy that I want. Cause, all they've got right now still is these things that are sort of generic, and then they add the right logo to whoever's, won the World Series. I just recoil at the idea of getting that kind of stuff. My wife has implored me to get a sweatshirt, a new one, because the last one she got with the Braves stuff on it was from 1995, and it was a nicely embroidered one, and it's held up great over the years, but I can't find an embroidered sweatshirt yet on the market, so I'm still looking for that kind of stuff. So as for me, I ended up getting a bunch of iron-on patches, and I'm going to create my own shirt with a whole bunch of World Series references on them. And about half of that stuff's arrived at this point, so we're still working on it. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, Fred, you spend plenty of money on World Series gear, or you keeping pretty low?
I spent some money. I bought myself and my son a World Series hat, and I bought my daughter-in-law and my wife shirts and sweatshirts and things. And if you want to pick up your phone, let me get that text number up here. Let me see. If you'll get back to this for John. If you'll text 85311 or text Chipper to 85311. Dugout Mugs will send you a World Championship, what they call a knob shot glass. It's a knob of baseball bat, shot glass in the middle, World Championship Braves, and it's free from Dugout Mugs, $30 if you buy one, but it's free if you text Chipper to 85311.
So, yeah, so why would you pay for something you could get for free?
Yeah, man, that's the non-generic thing for you there. I don't know what you do with the shot glass, but hey, it's a nice thing to have. I've got mine coming, and I'm going to buy some more stuff here as soon as I can decide what's the stuff that I'm never going to use I want to buy.
Yeah, exactly. And we're just trying to help the team buy and spend more this off season to try and do it all again, right? So just helping out the cause here. But yeah, still living in the moment, the glory of winning a World Series. Don't ever want to let that feeling go, but things are ramping up quickly, as we talked about in the off season. So a lot to get into for sure. And obviously the biggest thing everybody wants to talk about right now is Freddie Freeman. And, you know, I have to say, because this is off season and stuff happens quickly, we're recording this on a Thursday night. I hope a deal gets done sometime soon, but maybe it gets done before we get the podcast out. But as things stand on Thursday night, there's still no deal. Look at that rhyming. There's not a deal yet for Freddie Freeman. The latest rumors we're hearing, and both of these rumors come from two of the most unreliable sources in the business, but you have Bob Nightingale saying that there was an offer for 5 and 130, and then you have John Heyman saying that the hangup right now is a sixth year. So that's the latest that we've heard this week so far. I find both of those kind of hard to believe. If the 6 year is the hangup, just give it to them. Like, I mean, that should not be a big deal. I would think if that was the issue that it would already be done. I thought it would more so be Freddie trying to get a seventh year. But it sounds like, again, according to Heyman, that a 6 year is what is hanging things up right now. But Alan, I'll go to you first. Just your latest thoughts, feelings on Freddie Freeman, re-signing with the Braves.
I was just trying to figure out how many shirts I'd have to buy in order to get pretty enough money here. I hope this is not just about the 6 year. Let's start with that 5-130 thing. I think that was Paul Goldschmidt's contract, which, yes, should have been the baseline of what we're talking about. But number one, that's a couple of years ago. And number two, I think Freddie has already shown that he's got the, let's say, a little bit more longevity, a little more chance to outlive his normal aging, or the aging that you've been seeing of a lot of these athletes that have been trailing off towards the end of some of these longer term contracts. And I got to think that he's good for 6 or 7 at least. Would I send him to age 40? Probably not. But age 38, yeah, I think that would be reasonable. Freddie Freeman's a guy that goes to the post every day. He shows up. He works hard. He is an inspiration for the rest of his team. We had, obviously, the hardest working infield in baseball this year. Probably missed, about 10 games combined with all of them, or so, maybe 12. So this is a guy who inspires his team to do the work, to put the effort in, and he does it himself. And his performance speaks for itself. He is so consistent. You got to give this guy the 6 year. Now, beyond that, the question is how many dollars? And I don't know, of course, what exactly they're talking about in that kind of a stratosphere. These are numbers that I'm definitely not familiar with in my daily life. But at the same time, we're already seeing a lot of free agent pitchers go 5-7 year contracts, and that's shocking in and of itself. But if you're going to see people giving 5- and 7-year contracts to pitchers, you got to give at least a 6 year to a first baseman, for crying out loud, especially for one that already holds an MVP, Gold Glove, Silver Sluggers. I mean, what are you waiting on? This is a guy you can't replace, a guy that is your de facto team captain. Give him the money. You've got it. You're making money by virtue of the fact that the team he's on has won a World Series, been in the playoffs 4 years straight. Let's get this done. Let's stop screwing around. Let's get it done.
Yeah, and again, you talked about it. I don't worry about Freddie Freeman, over the next 5 or 6 years. He may lose some power, but he is going to hit. Like, I have no doubt that he's going to hit, at least 280 over the next 5 or 6 years. He is just, that good of a hitter. Again, the power may come down, the home runs may come down, the doubles may come down, but he's going to hit. I mean, I have no question about that. But, Fred, I mean, your thoughts on it, are you worried about a 6 year, and what are your kind of thoughts on the dollars as well?
Well, I think the years is the problem, but I said back in September that 7 at 174 with a $10 million signing bonus would guarantee him 185 at $30.8 million AAV, and you front load the contract with 330s to get him there. Tim Dirk slapped me around for suggesting that a superstar player option years, and he's right. So you're just going to give him the 7th year, and you're going to push his AAV up to something like 200. And if you want to front load it so that you're not dropping off 30 million at the back end and you're happy with dropping off 25, fine. But I think that, first of all, the current value of a dollar is always more than the future value. So the 30 million in 7 years is not going to be worth what the 30 million is now. And I'm not sure that's an issue, but I think 7 at 200 is probably the number. And if the Braves won't do that, then they should go slam their head in the door, because they're forgetting what he does, Alan said, besides play first base and swing the bat. And I never thought 6 years was a problem. I think if there isn't a problem with years, it's 7. And I think the money's, 175, 185 at 6, and maybe 200 at 7. And that's a big drop off at the end. But then by that time, he's already made a quarter billion dollars and probably doesn't need the other 5 million. I just don't see it as a problem. People say he's not coming back. He's going to LA. He's going to San Francisco. Well, he's not going to San Francisco because Belt went back there. The Yankees have been in touch with him. I don't think Freddie wants to do that. If Freddie wanted to do that, he'd be a Yankee now because they've already been in touch. So I think that, I think he comes back, and I think it's going to be something like that 6175, 7185, something like that, 185 to 200. Probably, I think 185, 190, because I think they can, that 200 is probably the top of that. He'll give a little discount for that, but he wants years. I'm sure 7 years, give it to him, write the check today.
Yeah, I mean, he's made it pretty clear. He doesn't want to put on another uniform, but it takes two to tango, as they say. And, you know, Alex has to step up and give him the years, the length that he's wanting to make sure that he does stay in Atlanta for the rest of his career. And I like your thought about front loading the deal. You know, it makes it a little bit easier, to handle late in a player's career if you're, you know, paying them $20-25 million as opposed to $30 million. So, you know, I feel like he's still going to play at an MVP level at least the next 2 or 3 years. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be some decline at some point. You don't want to continue to be paying him $30 million for those years. But the Braves are also in a window to win for the next 3 or 5 years with the young guys that they have. And I mean, I think you do that with Freddie Freeman. I should say continue to win. They are the World Series champs. So, I mean, they're still in that window. I think you have to have Freddie Freeman on board to continue to get that done. So, you know, I think we're all on the same page here. Give him the money. Of course, it's not our money, but, you know, what Freddie Freeman brings to the team, as you both have pointed to, you know, just off the field, what he brings in the clubhouse, the work ethic he brings to the rest of the team has been invaluable, and not to mention the merchandise. We talked about all the, you know, the merchandise that we bought from the World Series. There are a ton of people just sitting there waiting for this contract to get done so they can buy their Freddie Freeman for life jerseys. I mean, he sells a ton of merchandise. He makes the team a lot of money. So, I mean, for me, this isn't a tough decision. Give the man what he deserves. Give the man what he wants. I don't know why it's taking so long, but I'll ask one more thing of both of you, and then we'll move on. And Alan, I'll start with you. Does this get done before Thanksgiving? And what is your year and dollar figure?
I'll go do the latter part first, and I am entirely with Fred that I think something on the order of 7 and 200 is probably one of those numbers. Maybe 6, 180 would suffice, but I would like to see 7 and 200. So that, I think, represents his worth and his worth to the organization, and certainly acts as a commitment. The other aspects of it that could affect what's going on is, number one, what kind of negotiations may be going on behind the scenes for maybe an Austin Riley extension, or, although I think it may be still a little bit too soon for him, or a Max Fried extension. Those kind of things coming up are going to affect what the Braves are going to have to spend in the future as well. And that's why I do think front loading a contract for Freddie makes all the sense in the world as well. Ronald Acuna is going to get a $10 million bump on his deal that's already in place coming up in 2022. So there are escalator clauses that are affecting the budget overall. I think they could still afford this. But you've got to wonder what you're going to do about this core. Do you want to try and lock up Riley? Do you want to lock up Fried? What are you going to do about some of these other places or other guys? Dansby Swanson is one of them, of course. He's not going to command that kind of coin that the other two might, but at the same time, you've still got to make a decision about him. So there's a lot of things in play, probably. And that's increasing the complexity, but at the same time, they've been talking about this literally the entire year. That started back way back before spring training, I'm certain. So I don't think there's anything anybody doesn't understand about this. And if the Braves were waiting on market conditions to fall out to figure out if they could maybe save a buck or two, sorry, that ship has sailed. You're not going to save a buck or two here. Now you've got to go ahead and commit to get it done. The other thing that we'll have to deal with, but it's a relative minor issue, is that on Friday is the deadline, or by the time you hear this, was the deadline for protecting long-term minor leaguers on your 40-man roster to be protected against the Rule 5 draft. The Braves have protected four, and that has filled their 40-man roster. So at the moment, they can't add anybody, whether his name's Freddie Freeman or anybody else. There are some guys you can take off in deference to Freddie, and certainly you'd want to if you're going to get him signed. But there's other things that could go on, too. So, you know, whether it's trades that I think may be inevitable this offseason or anything like that. But that's still an administrative thing that have to get done. It's relatively a nitpick thing. So your overall question was, does this get done before the CBA expires or before Thanksgiving? I don't think it's going to get done before Thanksgiving at this point, but I do think that December 1st is kind of a hard date for a lot of teams about a lot of players, and I do think that we ought to pay attention around November 29th or 30th, somewhere in there, and let's see how that goes.
All right, Fred, same question to you. I know you've already given the years and dollars that you think, but do you think it gets done before Thanksgiving, or do you think it gets done before December 1st?
I'm closer to Alan. I think that the December 1st date isn't as important for a guy like Freeman as it is for everybody else, unless the teams are hearing there's going to be a lock, a trade or transfer lock after the 1st of December because the CBA expires. If they do freeze all transactions, the team will want to get it done before then, and that would make, yes, the 29th, the 30th, November, the date. I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm not in that loop, obviously. Nobody is. But I heard a couple of people who should know say that the teams are expecting to have a lockout, a transaction freeze, a lockout. They don't expect that to last to spring training. Well, if you're going to do that, you're talking about, hey, let's not do anything over Christmas or New Year's. Then we'll get back to work in January and fix this. So that's sort of what it sounds like to me. I think, as I said before, 7 at 200 is probably it. And as Alan said, they've known all year what Freddie's number is. They've known that. This isn't a negotiation. He told them, here's the number. Find out how you get me to that number and we'll be fine. And I don't know why they haven't done this. I can't imagine that that's any kind of money thing for this. Freddie, if you've read Chipper's book and you read Smoltz's book, they give him the number, get told the agent what they wanted, and he said, when he hits that number, sign me. And they haven't done that yet. So at that's they haven't got to that number of years and dollars that make sense to him. And when they hit that number, he's going to grab a pen and sign. That's what he's going to do.
Yeah, I guess where I am, too, is, you know, kind of what Alan said. This has gone on far too long. And both sides know, or at least the Braves know what Freddie wants, and it's time to pay up. I mean, the things have not changed. We've been in these discussions for a long time now, and you know, Freddie's clearly not backing down, nor should he. And the Braves know what he wants, and the Braves almost need Freddie more than Freddie needs the Braves. I mean, Freddie could probably go out and get more elsewhere. And the Braves need Freddie. I mean, it would be very bad PR if they let Freddie go, because I think he probably would take less money to be here than he would anywhere else. So the Braves know what he wants. I hope they don't want this to drag out anymore. Nothing's going to change on the matter. Let's get it done before Thanksgiving. I'm saying it's going to get done next Monday or Tuesday, so the 22nd or 23rd. Mainly saying that because I hope it doesn't get done till after we post this podcast. But I'm going to predict that it gets done before Thanksgiving, because then, you know, everybody enjoy the holidays, and then nothing's really going to happen after that, because then you're like 2 or 3 days before the lockout's going to start. So I think they get it done next Monday or Tuesday. I think it is going to be 6 years, $185 million, is probably what it probably should be. So that's my prediction. I think it gets done next Monday or Tuesday, but we talked about it a little bit, but I wanted to get more into it. And that is the lockout, because, you know, Rob Manfred came out on Thursday and said some things and, made it sound like, you know, we are most likely definitely heading towards a lockout. It doesn't sound like there's going to be games lost. Certainly that's the hope. I don't think either side wants to see that happen. You know, the game is in a really good place right now to, you know, miss games, to, you know, to not have that, I think would be a huge blow to the sport that I just don't know that they can take right now. So I just don't see that happening, but a lockout definitely looks like it's going to happen, Alan. And like I said, Brett, it sounds like that's going to be, you know, a complete freeze of transactions, which means, you know, we won't have winter meetings. We won't have the Rule 5 draft right away. We won't have, you know, trade signings for a while, which is going to make for a very slow and boring offseason. Cause like Fred said, they're probably just not going to pick it back up until after the holiday season either way. So I think if they do lock out, you know, we're probably looking at a, you know, pretty cold December, maybe even part of January. But, you know, Alan, your just thoughts on where it's going. You know, you see a lockout coming. How bad is it going to be? Do you see the season getting delayed because of all this?
I don't yet, at least. I like to think that this is merely a each side tries to do leverage, and they get leverage wherever they can. And right now, the only leverage that the other side really has is to be able to institute this lockout. And what it essentially does is forces the players to be in limbo, especially the free agents. The free agents that are looking for teams that want a place to land. That's still not going to affect the top end of the market. Those guys are going to still eventually get paid. They're still going to get their teams. They're just going to have to, you know, chill a bit until they can get things settled. But it's also a way to get the teams, or not the teams, but the two sides negotiating at the table seriously. So far, there have been some, you know, public comments about various proposals, mostly coming from the ownership side. They've been interesting, but also non-starters. So at this point, they are not negotiating, in my mind, in good faith, either side, really. And it's going to take some drastic measures, and sometimes that's just the calendar, to get things moving. I don't think either side really wants to lose games. I don't think either side wants to impact spring training or normal off-season kinds of operations. But inevitably, when these things happen, you're going to get a dent in it. How long should this last? Boy, I'd love to say it would be the month of December and they'd be settled by Christmas and ready to go in the new year. My suspicion is that with the way the acrimony has been, it's going to go into January, maybe January 10th or so, 10th or 15th, and it's going to be a very busy end of January and early part of February to get all the rest of the off-season work done. But that's the way they usually work. So I'm not looking forward to it either. I think it's detrimental to the sport, and I think it does chews away at fans' goodwill, but it is also the way they conduct business. So there you go. There's my Debbie Downer assessment.
Well, I mean, the bright side for Braves fans is they're coming off a World Series championship. So if this is the last time baseball's ever played, at least the Braves won the last World Series, right? But no, I don't think that's going to be the case. But I want to read the quote from Rob Manfred. He said, "I can't believe there's a single fan in the world who doesn't understand that an offseason lockout that moves the process forward is different than a labor dispute that costs games." Manfred really talking about the intelligence of fans, apparently, there. He said, as whether the side still had hope of hammering out a new CBA before December 1st, Manfred said the league was committed to continuing to offer proposals and suggestions in an effort to get an agreement before that date, but acknowledged that time is becoming an issue. And Fred, time certainly is an issue. I don't see any way there's any kind of agreement before December 1st, meaning a lockout is almost certainly coming.
Yeah, I'm all for putting Clark and Manfred in a room, and the one who walks out breathing wins. I'm telling you, these people for a sport that has all of this goodwill and all of this money and is just by definition, more people see this sport than any other sport in the country. And still, these two people can't agree, or these two sides can't agree. Union wants to get back up to that 51%. And while there are economists out there, and I can't pull the quote right now because I just looked for it, who say, you know, yeah, that the number, the physical number may be different, but the actual number is still the same. And I don't know how that works. I'm not a mathematician, so don't yell at me. But, you know, I think this is all in how you cut it. And I'm going to tell you that a lockout is a labor dispute. Any way that Manfred wants to cut that, and the suggestions that the league's made, they suggested that players' salaries be escalated based on war. 20 years plus ago, Don Budzelli suggested that players be paid according to performance. And the league stomped on that and squished it like a bug. And what do you think they're going to do with this proposal? It was dead on arrival. They send out these BS proposals. Both sides send out BS proposals, and it makes you wonder if they're actually talking inside that room, or they're sitting there smoking a cigar and drinking some good whiskey and saying, "Boy, we got that public turned up. We're going to really generate some interest on this." I don't know what they're doing, but they're not doing baseball any good. Neither side is doing baseball any good. The union's not doing the players any good. The league is not doing the teams or the players any good. And that's your job. Your job is to make money for MLB, and you don't do that when this fight is going on. I forgot who this was. Maybe it was Ryan Spielberg the other day or Brad Lidge. There's no middle income. The middle income part of baseball has vanished. You have highly paid players and people in the first 6 years, and there's nobody in between. And that's, you know, that creates no middle class. It's just a bad distribution of the money in the game. And the union is run by the rich players. It is. And the reason they want the base salary raised is because that pushes the salary of the players at the top up. But if you don't do something about competitive balance and equalizing the teams that win, keeping teams from tanking for 20 years, hello, Pittsburgh and Baltimore and places like that, until you get teams that aren't trying to win out of the damn game, then you're going to continue to have this. And I just don't think either side wants to do that. We used to say in the military, nothing ever gets done without a suspense date. Well, suspense date's coming 1st of December, and they ain't going to be done, and nobody's going to get fired over it, and the fans and the game is going to suffer for it. So both sides just got me so spitting mad, they wouldn't want to talk to me in a private room, I tell you that.
Yeah, and we saw this coming when you go back to 2020 and just the way that they botched. You know, that it wasn't even a labor dispute, just trying to come together to play a game. I mean, it was just, it was so frustrating, you know, watching all of that play out, and you just knew it was going to carry over into this offseason as well, which is why I'm so glad the Braves won the World Series and we have that to kind of hold on to get us through this, because it's going to be a bumpy ride for sure.
The union still got this grievance against the league for not scheduling enough games in 2020. I mean, gee whiz, guys, that was a year and a half ago. Let it go. Get on. Yeah. Let's go forward, not backward. But the league's not going to do anything until that grievance is settled, and I don't think the union will either, and I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, it's just it's an absolute mess. It's hurting the game for sure. You hate to see it. But let's just hope we don't have a pause or a delay to the season. That's really all I'm wishing for, hoping for at this point. But with the way these two sides work and quote unquote negotiate, who knows what's going to happen, but it's going to be a long, cold, frustrating off season for sure. Let's try to bring the positive momentum back here a little bit and talk about TV revenue, because that could be getting better for the Atlanta Braves. And Fred, I know you want to talk about this, but I'll give you a second to breathe here, and I'll go to Alan first. Just your thoughts on the Braves TV revenue possibly picking up here in the next couple of years, and hopefully the Braves payroll is going up as well.
Well, they've already announced that the payroll will be increased for 2022. Haven't said how much. They never do say how much, but there is some room between where they're at right now, which was essentially record levels at the end of the year, to the luxury tax threshold, which is still quite a ways away. The Braves have been ranking typically in the about the 15th, 14th kind of range in terms of total spending in the league. I don't know exactly how that came out this year, but somewhere between 10th and 15th would probably be reasonable because they added about 10-ish million at the trade deadline to what they had started with. Now, all that said, we've got some improvements coming. When the Braves renegotiated their TV deal back in 2014, they were telling us that it could mean an additional $500 million over the lifetime of the contract. That was a contract that was originally going to expire around 2027 with the old Peachtree Network and Fox Sports. Those have been redone, and apparently there's some escalator clauses in there that Fred will tell you about. But the fact is that the Braves are looking at some additional revenues coming in the future, and there may be some other interesting little perks coming as the current holders of the regional sports networks, the Bally Group, Sinclair actually running the Bally Sports channels, may be having some difficulties. So with that point, I'll see if Fred's recovered. We got him some oxygen, and then we'll see what we can do from there.
They had a press conference for Liberty Media, and Greg Mahaffey was out of there, and one of the asked if they were going to be selling the Braves. David Farber of CNBC asked if it was a good time to sell the Braves, and he said, nope, not sellers, move along. He said, first of all, it's a bad tax time to do it. We'd certainly be messing up our taxes if we did it. And secondly, we don't have any intention of selling, so next question, please, essentially. He was nicer than that, but that's what he essentially what he said. They did discuss possibilities of potentially Liberty Media spinning the Braves off into its own publicly held company, but that would still be within the purview of Liberty somehow. And the TV deal, he told the reporters there that the TV deal will increase from about $80 million a year to $100 million a year in 2023, and that it would go up to about $120 million by 2027. And that's all as a result of what Alan mentioned, the renegotiation in 2014 when the Braves were in this, when Peachtree was bowing out of the system, and the Braves were in this negotiation, and Liberty Media used their influence as a media company to convince Fox to push these numbers up a little bit over the length of the contract. And most of that kicked in. Well, some of that kicked in right away, but the large majority of it kicked in at the end, because that was a part of the contract, I think, that was still maybe an option of some kind. I don't remember the exact wording of that right now, but as it stands right now, we're going to be at $100 million of TV money in 2023 and up to $120 million by 2027. And just to make you feel good, the Dodgers pulled in $237 million in TV money last year. So that's sort of where the system is right now. And to Alan's point, the Braves finished the season 11th in total payroll with $153,112,625. That's the highest we've been in a long time, and it's going to go up, but then so is everybody else's. This TV contract thing, Alan mentioned that Sinclair owns Bally. He didn't mention that Sinclair is gushing money like a Texas oil well, and they're in trouble. A lot of the Sinclair stations, a lot of the sports networks, so Dish doesn't carry them anymore. I don't know whether DirecTV does or not, but the Sinclair station here in town, one of the Sinclair stations in town, is no longer being broadcast on Dish Network. They're losing all kinds of income money from the cable companies and the satellite companies, and the company itself is in really bad shape. And if you think back to when in 2019, 18 to 19, when the negotiations were going on for the bidding for the sports networks, Liberty Media were in on that. and Sinclair bid stupid money, and they got it. And now Liberty Media is sitting around and said, well, you know, we'll just wait, stand around, wait for them to fall on their face, and we'll pick them up. They made a comment here that I want to read to you about out of this. It's from the AJT piece by Tim Tucker in today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It says that we can. This is from Schiller talking to the press. He said, we continue to believe that direct-to-consumer TV is critical to our future. And he's talking about Liberty Media's future there. And we are actively engaged with MLB in developing what the future of streaming baseball looks like. Streaming sports looks like, because MLBAM, the people that run the MLB TV service, they already stream games for other sports. Most people don't understand it, but back when MLBAM got sued, it came out that they were actually doing the screening mechanisms for some of the other sports that are being streamed out there as a subcontractor to those folks. So if this all comes about, it could be a windfall for the Braves. It would certainly lift the problem with people who live in Braves country but are blocked out from their games because their particular cable provider doesn't show it. Manfred said he wants to get that done pretty quickly. I'm not sure how quickly that's going to be, but certainly 2023 is the date he's shooting for. And if he gets that done, I just think that Liberty's going to have – they're in this up to their neck in terms of profitability. And when you talk about profitability for a team that owns part of a television network, understand that, sure, the team gets paid for televising the games, but they're paying the company that owns them. So when they go out as part owner of that company, they get part of the earnings back. It's double dip. It's what the Yankees do. It's what the Mets do. It's what the Dodgers do. It's what the Cubs do. They double dip that money. So it makes all that kind of sense for Liberty to own broadcast rights to the Braves games and to pay the Braves for the games and pay them part of the money they earn from watching the games. The whole thing boils down to Liberty paving the way to provide more money to the team to continue raising payroll and continue to bring good players and keep the good players in Atlanta. And write Freddie Freeman a check, please.
Yes, please. I don't know if I was able to keep up with necessarily all of that, but all I want to know is, can I please watch the Braves on YouTube TV next year or any other kind of, you know, streaming service? I mean, I felt like I was having to become an illegal hacker in order to try to find the Braves game through a streaming service last year. I mean, it was tough sledding all year long because I have YouTube TV and they don't have Bally Sports. So I wasn't able to watch Braves games and I had to go through a VPN to be able to do it, you know, on MLB TV. It's just make it easier for your fans to watch their team. I don't get it, but hopefully through what all you're talking about, hopefully that's going to get better for at least Braves fans going forward. But at the very least, it sounds like the Braves could be benefiting financially, which is always good because it looks like the payroll is going to continue to go up. Like you said, it finished about $153 million last year, looking to go up already. The Braves have already signed a player. I guess we should at least mention that. They signed a backup catcher in Manny Pena for 2 years and $8 million. So they locked down the backup catcher position there. I guess, Alan, do you have any thoughts on Manny Pena, that signing? I don't know if that kind of caught you off guard or not. I thought maybe William Contreras would start the year as a backup because, you know, Langeliers is going to get all the starts in AAA. But they decided to go out and get Manny Pena.
The Braves have a bit of an interesting timing dilemma in terms of Contreras and Langeliers. The trick is going to be, do you keep them as backups when they really are everyday catchers, or do you go ahead and use them some other way? At the same time, you don't want to drive Travis d'Arnaud into the ground, especially in a hot Atlanta summer. So the idea of getting Manny Pena, I think, is a brilliant one. The kind of money they gave him also tells me what they intend is almost a total platoon of the catching position. You know, what we saw a couple of years ago was Tyler Flowers mixed with d'Arnaud or others, or, you know, shoot, now I'm forgetting the names of our former catchers. But
Suzuki.
Yeah, Suzuki in particular I was thinking of. So you had that tandem of guys who could hit, but they needed a break fairly consistently. And when you use them in tandem that way, they were hitting a ton. Manny Pena has the ability to hit a ton. So does Travis d'Arnaud, but you can't use them every day that way. So using them like that, I think, has the ability to build a two-headed catcher that's going to have the output of, oh, say, a JT Realmuto or better. So I think that's what they're trying to get at, and I think it's a brilliant move. The only eye-opener for me was that they gave him a lot of money to do it, but at the same time, it sounds like one of those Alex Anthopoulos moves where he had a guy in mind, he targeted him, and he wanted him to sign like today, and that's so they gave him the money to do that, and that's I think going to pay some dividends as we see in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think part of it's reactionary too, with the fact that once Travis went down in 2021, it was a mess at the catcher position. So, you know, this gives you a little bit more depth and reliability there if something were to happen to Travis. And as we've mentioned several times, something typically does happen to Travis. It's just, you know, unfortunate. He's very injury prone, but now you have somebody in Pena who can step up immediately and, you know, either fill it as a starter or perhaps if Contreras or Langoliers is ready at that time, then they step up and can split those duties. But, you know, at least having somebody, a veteran like Pena around, I think is very smart after what happened to the Braves this past season. And, you know, Pena is very good defensively. He'll run into some home runs as well. So, you know, certainly a very solid, capable backup and somebody that who could fill in for d'Arnaud, you know, on a more regular basis if he were to get injured. But, Fred, your thoughts on the signing?
It's a great signing. He's a superior defensive catcher, as you said. He did wonders with the Milwaukee rotation. He hit 13 homers in 208 PA this year. That's pretty good. I mean, that's a 40 homer season over 162 games. And he drove in a lot of runs. He got hits with runners on base. He had 33 RBI. That's 20 other people's runs, 20 people he knocked in as a catcher. Okay, he didn't have a high batting average, but he slugged 439, and he was on base just under 300, just under 30% of the time. And if you're a catcher and you're catching every other game and you're supplying half of a 20-homer package, that's really good. He was a 1.5 win catcher for them, and he only hit 189. So that tells you how good his defense was. And I don't have his throwing stuff in front of me. And Jake, you watched Brewers more than I did. Maybe, you know, I recall Pena's having a good arm.
Yeah, he does.
And he quick release. And this year he was on SiriusXM, talking to Spielbergs and Lidge the other day. And he said that, he found out late in life, because he's 34, he found out late in life that if he'd start letting the ball get deeper and get into that strike zone, he could hit it a lot harder. And suddenly that's why he came up with all these home runs. Catchers do tend to do that, though. They figure it out as far as hitters for power late. But I think it's a good sign. I also think it makes Contreras expendable. I just don't see a path for him, because Langeliers is going to get the catching duties at AAA. And if something happens to Travis, let me say that, when something happens to Travis next year, Langeliers is going to get his chance. And I think that once he gets a taste of the majors, it's going to be awfully hard to get him out of Atlanta. Langeliers to me is Posey to the Giants in 2008, 2009, whenever that was, 2009. I think Langeliers is that good. And I think that makes Contreras a nice target or a nice piece this winter to fill in places. Of course, we're not going to do anything while the lockout's going on. But I just think that moving forward quickly, like Alan suggested, Tim Dirk said something in the newsletter about the teams that go for upside quickly tend to be the winners. And they picked on the Braves and Dodgers for doing that. And I think that's the MO. And like you said, he wanted him. He went out and paid what it works, and he'll worry about filling that slot. The Pena played third base one game, and he's played some outfield in the minor leagues. He's not completely inept in emergencies around the thing, and we're going to have the DH, I hope, so that we can stop all this argument. But I just think it was a great sign, and I think it bodes, it tells us that we heard from multiple sources that the season, the World Series wasn't over before Alex was on the phone, burning up the phone lines, talking about players he might need and finding out what the price was. I think teams want to get them done before the 1st of December, and they don't want to be forced into paying too much money in February. And the pitchers want to get it done so they have a place to go. They don't want to be rushing to spring training at the last minute and meeting the catcher for 5 minutes then the series season started. So I think this is all part of a package. And I think it's a shift a little bit in the way that we've done business to let's load up now for the season and not wait till the last minute so much, because we are the champions and we need to come out strong, and in all positions next year.
Yeah, certainly like that mentality as well. And as we know, Alex has been very aggressive early in off season, so expect more moves before that lockout happens.
Yeah, in fact, I was thinking the day Peeney was signed is like, okay, how many days is it going to be until Contreras is traded? Because he would certainly headline a nice package for something that the Braves really need. So we're still waiting on that deal, but I think we can still continue to look for it, because I think that Fred's right. He is definitely expendable now.
Yeah, sorry. Like Fred said. Carry on. Like Fred said too. I think it's gonna be hard for a lot of trades to happen right now. I see a lot of signings happening before the lockout, but not necessarily trades. I could be wrong on that, but yeah, William definitely becomes expendable, because when the signing happened, because like I said, I thought Contreras, you know, could have started the season at the backup. That would have been, you know, okay. But I really didn't understand sending him back to AAA, where, you know, Langeliers is going to get the majority of the at-bats. Obviously, you have the DH at AAA too, so I mean, you can kind of divvy those up and still get the at-bats. But
they picked up Tromp too. They got Tromp down there as a catcher as well that they like, apparently. I mean, there's just catchers everywhere down there now.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, and like you said, Alan, I mean, Contreras could be, you know, be a very solid value, because there are a lot of teams that just don't have a lot of, you know, catchers right now that they can rely on. So absolutely, could be a very solid trade chip for them. Just a couple of news items before we get out of here. The Braves added Drew Waters, Freddie Tarnock, William Woods, and Brooke Wilson to the 40-man roster ahead of the deadline to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. A couple of notable names that weren't protected, Daisville Hernandez, Trey Harris, Justin Dean, Thomas Burrows, and Grayson Janista. Maybe one of those guys. I think Burrows could be taken, but it wouldn't be a huge loss, but he has been kind of knocking on the door for several years now. But again, nothing that really major there that the Braves, you know, will be too concerned about losing right there. But I think that was all the news that I had. I don't know, Alan, is there anything I missed or anything else you wanted to mention before we get out of here?
Nothing specific. If you've got a inkling that you haven't heard a couple of those names that were protected before, then check out what I wrote up on Tomahawk Take about those guys, because that I wanted to find out about them too. And it turns out they got some stuff, and there's a couple of pitchers that you might want to pay attention to in the next couple of years. So Brooks Wilson, William Woods, not bad names to file away in the back of your head there.
Yeah, one thing I failed to mention or talk about is the it is awards week, and you had Corbin Burnes win the Cy Young for the NL, and Robbie Ray for the AL, and then you had Ohtani win the MVP for the AL, and Bryce Harper won it for the NL, and Austin Riley finished 7th, Freddie Freeman 9th, and Ozzie Albies 13th. I was a little surprised that Austin Riley finished as low as he did. Thought he had a shot at top five, but I think from a voter's perspective, somebody who wasn't watching the team probably doesn't really understand the value that Riley had, pretty much picking up the slack of Ozuna and Acuna when they went down, and, you know, being that type of guy in the middle of the order. But if you're just a voter and you're looking at numbers, I mean, his numbers are very comparable, basically exactly like Freddie Freeman. So I don't know how you could vote for one over the other, because when you just look at their numbers, they're pretty much the same. But, you know, as a Braves fan, Alan, it's, you know how important Riley was, how they desperately needed, somebody to pick up the slack once, Ozuna was gone and Acuna went down.
Yeah, and I think that the voting reflects the fact that voters know about Freddie Freeman. They didn't really know about Austin Riley. They got an inclination because at the end of the year, people are talking about Riley much more. So that's probably why he got seventh. But at the same time, there's probably a little bit of vote splitting going on there. Had Freddie not had a decent season or gotten hurt or been out for a while, something like that, I think Riley definitely gets in the top five, because he got a lot of consideration, a lot of ballots. I think he was on 27 of the 30 ballots, something like that.
That sounds right.
And that's pretty good. So he's not getting a lot of consideration this year, but if he keeps this up, he's going to be a perennial guy who's knocking on the door for that award, kind of like Freddie Freeman has been.
Yeah. And Fred, your guy, Ozzie Albies, finished 13th. Your thoughts on the MVP or the awards that we've seen this week?
Well, I sort of thought Garcia was going to win the Rookie of the Year in the American League. I'm not sure Rosarena was better than Garcia, but the MVP in the American League was unanimous. Ohtani was always going to win that because nobody's ever done what he's done before.
It's a shame for Vlad Jr. too, because Vlad Jr. had a really good season. But when Ohtani does what he does, you can't.
Yeah, Vlad didn't win 15 games. He'd have a two point something ERA. I understand why Austin didn't finish higher than he did. First of all, where he was in the lineup at the start of the season. And then you split and vote between Oz, who had a good, and Freddie and him. When you split the votes three ways, it does affect you at the end of the year. I'm glad he finished that high. I'm like Alan. He's going to be continuously up there over his career. I knew Burness had to win the National League. I know statistically, Wheeler had a better year, but Burness took his team to the postseason. And I know people, make no difference. Well, yes, it does. Yes, it does. The games are more important when you're out there and you're carrying a team to the postseason. And that's part of the reason Harper won the MVP, is because he was the only one on the Phillies that they could depend upon hitting. And he carried that team until his legs just couldn't handle all that dead weight. And the Phillies collapsed on top of him. But you can't blame Harper for them not winning, because without Harper, they're in fourth place. So that's why Harper won. Don't begrudge Harper that. It's one of these things that people are voting for the best offensive player, when really that's the Hank Aaron Award. And it doesn't get nearly the play it ought to get. And it's a shame that in a year when we're honoring Hank Aaron MVP, MLB didn't make a bigger deal out of the Hank Aaron Award, because that's really the best offensive player in the league, and that's Vlad in the AL. It's something that MLB needs to come in and make a statement about and say, look, this is what this is for, and let's make it important that Hank has his name on it. Let's make it just as important that Hank has his name on that as it is that Jackie Robinson has his name on the Rookie of the Year Award. Those awards are important because those players were important, not just to the Braves and the Dodgers, but to the league as a whole. And I think that it's important that we educate people about how important it was and how hard it was for players like Robinson and Campanella and Aaron to come up and at the time they did and do the things that they did over their career. So I'm disappointed in that, but the awards pretty well turned out the way I thought they would. I sort of thought Luis Garcia would win the Rookie of the Year Award, but in the AL, but I have nothing against Rosarena. I just thought Garcia did more for the Astros.
Yeah, no, it's certainly fair there. But that will do it for this episode of the Tomahawk Take podcast. Appreciate you listening. Please make sure that you go subscribe to the Tomahawk Take podcast. Make sure you follow all of us on TomahawkTake.com as well, where you can see all of our work in written form as we'll continue to cover this offseason for the Atlanta Braves and still hold on to that 2021 World Series title. I'm not ready to let go and end those celebrations just quite yet, but do appreciate you listening to the Tomahawk Take podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
This has been the Rule 5 Protection Edition of the Tomahawk Take Podcast, which is a production of TomahawkTake.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants, and while Minute Media allows us to sign all the talent we can use, we only keep the most productive writers on the roster. All rights reserved. One of the musical selections used today comes to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. This was a piece by Kevin MacLeod entitled Batty McFadden, which was modified to fit the available space. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. All other musical selections used come via rights already purchased by TomahawkTake.com. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast today, and may your World Series merchandise arrive quickly and not be locked out. See y'all next time.